Podcasting is a complicated profession,
which is why we're here to discuss Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morton, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow refugees on the path. Tony Sinilar is here. Hi, Tony.
Hello, nerds. Hello, Jedis. Hello, Dan and Kat.
And Kat Banish is also here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. I just want everyone to know this is 45 minutes in from us starting this podcast.
That's generous.
It's accurate.
Well, we are here to discuss episode 5, the penultimate episode of Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is just entitled part 5 because they didn't come up with clever names for these.
And Dan, excuse me, part V.
Part V, not to be confused with
classic,
Star Wars episode V, different.
No. Yeah. Or is it, Dan? Think about it.
Oh,
think
man.
About the parallels.
Ooh, there's a lot happening. Tony, I think you volunteered or took one step forward, or
yeah.
The rest of us took one step backward. It was unclear.
All right, I'm doing the recap in a complicated profession tradition / general podcasting tradition. It's unclear how much of the recap I will get through before we start interrupting and just talking about things that we like. But
well,
let's see how this
note.
Goes. On that note. Didn't you think it was interesting, that? Our episode, I believe, opens with a flashback where we actually see Hayden Christensen as Anakin
collecting
and Ewan
his
McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi back on Coruscant in one of their Jedi rooms. It looks exactly like the Jedi Council room, but maybe it's one floor up, and they are sparring, and there's some discussion of basically tactics and emotions and whatnot. Then we jump to the, I believe, to Vader's ship. I'm forgetting the exact order of the scenes. Reva and Vader are kind of continuing their conversation from before, and Reva has tracked Obi-Wan and Leia via the droid Lola that they put a little tracker on that also turns her eyes red so that you know she's evil.
I do appreciate that.
That's for us. To the planet Jabim. We know that Jabim is where the kind of not quite a resistance cell, but the people who are on the path were located there. So we go there, and Kenobi is getting off the ship, and there's a bunch of people, and they all need to leave, but it's they've got to get ready, and it's a whole thing, and it's basically, are they going to be able to leave before the Empire gets there? No, because then the rest of the episode wouldn't happen. So the Empire shows up, Lola has snuck off and basically sealed all the doors. They need someone who can climb through a duct to maybe help with that. Also, Kumail Nanjiani is in the show again. They're blocking all the doors. Reva and a rather large, impressive-sized contingent of stormtroopers goes down and are shooting at a door to try and get their way in. People inside are nervous because they haven't figured out how to get out yet. And Obi-Wan says, I'm going to go talk to Reva. I'm going to negotiate. And they have one of the, perhaps finally, their interesting back and forth that I think we've been waiting several episodes for, where we get a little bit insight into why is Reva doing what she is doing. Eventually, the Empire does get into the facility. There's a huge firefight, and Obi-Wan's at the front with his lightsaber, killing lots of stormtroopers, blocking lots of shots, but lots of the civilians are taking shots as well. Tala, who has changed out of her Imperial outfit, is there and takes a bad blaster shot to the gut, and her droid is taking down stormtroopers, but he falls also, and Tala is kind of her last dying action, shoots a control panel, sealing herself in with a bunch of stormtroopers, and activates a thermal detonator.
Which I'd say, I think it's the first time we've actually ever seen a thermal detonator go off in the show.
Go off, yeah. They're a big deal. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I have elided over Obi-Wan and Reva's conversation, because I think we'll come back to that in detail. Mm-hmm. Leia is up in a duct somewhere, not really being supervised, and she finds Lola, and they get the thing open. Darth Vader is on the planet, and Reva kind of sets him up for a trap. Obi-Wan has surrendered, but then he breaks away from his people after his conversation with Reva, and Darth Vader comes striding into the base, and there's a very visually impressive scene where he is pulling a transport ship out of the air. The transport ship like collides to the ground and he's just pulling chunks of it off. And we see it's empty. And a second transport ship in the distance flies away. Reva uses this opportunity to attack Vader, for she was one of the younglings who saw all of her friends killed by Anakin. And very interesting kind of one-sided fight between Reva and Vader, where he is not even using a lightsaber
that was
for a
very
while.
Cool.
Takes her double lightsaber, breaks it in half, throws her a half for a while, and then ultimately she is stabbed and left for dead. The Grand Inquisitor from previous episodes
we
shows
knew
up
it. We
for
knew
like
it.
One line of dialogue just to kind of like spit on her, basically. And then they walk away, but leaving her for dead, but not dead. And as she's kind of like lying in the dirt, she finds Obi-Wan's little communicator, which has, and she replays the last message he got, which was from Senator Bail Organa, who is horrible at OPSEC. And so she knows about Luke and where Luke is, and presumably the start of that next episode will act on it. We then jump to a final scene on the transport ship with all of the refugees and Leia. There's like a great establishing shot where like Leia is this like one little dot in a giant cargo bay full of people garbed in dirt clothing. I think his name is Reckon, comes back to talk to Obi-Wan and says like, yeah, the hyperdrive is shot and they're coming for us, and this is not great.
And then perhaps my favorite exchange of like, oh, I have a horrible feeling. I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure whatever it is fine. Yeah. The horrible realization, like, you know, it's not fine, but you don't want people to know yet. Because like, again, I can't believe that whatever that Obi-Wan has, this thing that connects to the communicator, it's not encrypted. It's not password protected.
No password.
There's no two-factor authentication.
I also
there's
like
not even a chain code required.
Also,
it's just like, guys, also, this is the most important information, and you just casually gave it to a man you know is a con man, mm-hmm. who has already said he's looking for the new business, so that, like, as he goes wandering off to set up new cons among these. It's just
I also like
poor
how
judgment.
Convenient. Let's not forget how convenient it is that it statics out everything except the salient details.
Yes.
Like, it's like,
but mainly, this is just a lesson for Bail Organa. Just like, maybe use like have a couple code words so that you don't say,
to be fair,
the planet.
He learns from this lesson.
Yes, that's
and
true.
Become and has a code name later.
Oh, that's yes, right. That's what is he later?
He's one of the first fulcrum.
Fulcrum. Yes, yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So yeah, I guess he's a diplomat or a government official, not a spy, at least not yet. He's not part of the resistance.
But that's actually probably, I think, when they first sure, we have a plan of how I want to talk through this, but I think the two things, taking a step back and looking at this, like the creation of the resistance, I think two things that were really cool about this. One is the speech Obi-Wan gives of,
yes,
we're gonna do this, of like, we're gonna, like, essentially I see that as the moment of like, that's when the resistance was formed in my mind. And I think mm-hmm. it's really cool that we've retconned it again, that Obi-Wan is off running the resistance. And I'm kind of curious, I don't think they're going to do this, but if they keep doing series of Obi-Wan, of essentially, what if Obi-Wan was running the resistance the entire time? It was just at the very end he was back on Tatooine, but he was like leaving and jumping off all the time to keep running and managing all this, and we just never knew it. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing, what was the second thing I was going to say? Oh, when he gives the communicator to Camille, I actually thought that might be how Bail Organa gets connected to the resistance, because at this point he's not really, I keep wondering, there's the rebellion. Excuse me, the rebellion. Yeah. Everyone. If that was
they go. Well, what's, I forget what the exact progression in titles are.
They're rebels, then the rebellion, then the Rebel Alliance. Because it's like all the rebel cells unite to form the alliance, and then the resistance is the sequel trilogy.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think I guess I was using resistance, not with a capital R.
Yes, exactly, lower, but general resistance.
Yeah. Yes.
Not like that card game out of the resistance.
Yeah. General resistance. Is he in charge of the resistance?
what an appropriate name, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess you're in charge because your name is General Resistance.
No. It'd be General Ohm. Mm.
So a couple, lots of stuff in this episode. I think as we kind of predicted, we had a feeling that Reva was one of the Padawans.
Yes.
From the opening scene. So that
bore and that was a crumb. That was clearly not, like, that didn't come out of nowhere. We knew we knew something was there, and we also, I think, you know, the show wanted us to kind of question what's her deal? Yeah. You know, yeah. What is her deal? And they, it seems like we got her deal here, and I think it was what a lot of us had guessed. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I mean, so her whole thing is that she's full of anger, which, you know, that's highly compatible with her current occupation, but that she wanted to rise to Grand Inquisitor to have alone time with Darth Vader / Anakin, because that, because her end game is revenge, right?
I think it was very much the end justify the means to get there.
Yeah.
But I like that she also had a lot of hatred towards Obi-Wan as well, because I think Obi-Wan has the moment where he thinks like, oh, we're going to be allies, and but like she turns back and says, where were you?
Where were you?
And he was your Padawan, right? Yep. What is your responsibility in all this? And I think Obi-Wan sort of put it back by that. And I think, I'm curious to know, and later in that confrontation, Vader says Obi-Wan was wise to use you against me. I wonder how much
he kind of did.
Yeah, because he's like,
The Jedi, again, the Jedi are not precisely like paladins, basically, right?
Nope.
Like they are
warlocks.
We're meant to think that they are like, you know, all about, you know, the sort of purity and good, etc. But like we've seen over the course of many TV shows and movies that they are just as flawed as everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of interesting to have a position where Obi-Wan is, yes, he wants to do the right thing, but right now I think his priority is like, oh, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to protect Leia. That's literally, I honestly don't care about anything else. Like that's part of me that used to think that, but like I'm just prioritizing like survival right now.
I do think he goes, we see this episode as kind of the culmination of his little arc in the previous episode where he's got his Force powers, he is deadly with a lightsaber, he's giving his Jedi general speeches.
Mm-hmm. Negotiating.
Yeah.
He's negotiating.
And think strategically, the whole thing, like the juxtaposition of the fight. Another one is like, oh, I know how this battle turned out, so now we've already lost. And I thought that was him losing spears. Like, no, now we need to like con them into something else.
Yeah.
But sorry, also, I would say, I think he does seem invested in the lives of these civilians, whereas before it's like, I can't be involved in that, right?
I can't
like,
care about anybody. I can't care about
it's not that I'm bad. I do not have the capacity anymore. I am too beaten down and world weary. And here he like sees these, you know, basically refugees and is like, okay, this, and you know, they have the line where, you know, Reckon is like, this is a problem that you created, because they were waiting on a transport that we used to get you. I don't know if we know that they have pieced together. It's like, you also created it because you were tracked, which is sloppy. So he's pretty responsible for them.
I also want to say, I think there's something really interesting in sort of Obi-Wan has, so much of what we saw from him in the first half of the series is essentially him being traumatized by thinking he killed his best friend. And even when he learns that Anakin's still alive and he finally comes face to face with him and is like, what have you become, etc. It's like there's a bit of he hits rock bottom. Like the worst thing that he can imagine has now happened, which is it's not even that he killed his best friend, but like his best friend has been turned and is evil. And in some ways, it feels like a catharsis moment for him to be able to move past it, because he's like, I spent all my time like obsessing about what I thought happened and that didn't happen, and now something really bad has happened and I'm just like, I need to just move forward, I need to just keep going, I have to focus on my goal in front of me. And so it's, some of this is kind of his rehabilitation as he realizes like all this time and energy I've spent obsessing and about this terrible thing that happened is not getting me anywhere. I need to be proactive. I need to actually, maybe caring about other people is the way to back to whatever I've lost in that time. And I really enjoy that arc for him.
Mm-hmm. And I guess part of it, maybe he is seeing, you know, there are other people doing things in the world, right? And Tala shares with him her story about, you know, what she saw that made her give up on the Empire, and her little tokens that she's showing for each person that she gets out. And it's like, yeah, you've just been sitting in, you know, working at the sad depression factory, you know. And you could have been doing things. Not everybody has given up hope.
Yeah. But that's where I'm curious, though, too, is like, that's why I was semi-joking that is, if there is a second Obi-Wan series, is he continue to be involved in the rebellion, because we've only got one episode left. I mean, I see this going two ways, right? He has his rebellion, and he comes back in terms like, okay, yes, my number one goal, especially clearly the next episode is going to end up with a threat of some sort on Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
You don't dangle that out there. Maybe he realizes like, okay, this really is my role. I will stay here, but this is my job. You can keep fighting the rebellion, but I'm going to maintain that hope. Or he stays involved, right? I was joking about it, but I could actually see that happen.
Well, we know a little bit. You know, we talked in our member special episode about the Rebels episode, which takes place a few years after this, right? We know he's still at least on Tatooine part-time. Maybe it's a part-time job.
Commute, Dan. You can telecommute also, you know?
Yep, sure. Well, speaking of which, I think that the big thing that ties a lot of this together is going to be some communication with Qui-Gon in the last episode, and the idea of him realizing I am, you know, almost getting to like a Buddhist monk sort of place of like
acceptance.
I am not only acceptance, but like my job is to, I'm going to devote myself to communing with the Force or whatever, right? Like, so that he gets to the point when he, you know, saves Ezra Bridger in Rebels and he seems much more zen, right?
Yes.
Like, that he's got that whole, like, thing under control. And then his role as the mentor to Luke in A New Hope, like, to bridge to that character who is very self-assured and very confident and, like, very, has a lot of equanimity, like, sort of, I think we need to have him have like a spiritual reconnection. And I think that's where Qui-Gon will come into this.
Yeah, Qui-Gon, or he also takes a lizard up the nose. Like one of the two things for those who miss the Boba Fett. Yes.
You chase that with a shot of the Qui-Gon Jinn, though.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I did want to say, too, just to, on a lighter note, too, we probably should talk about that fight between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan. But I did, speaking of like how he retains that, or regaining that sort of sense of masterhood of like when the ships are departing and Darth Vader is staring at it. And I think one of our readers asked the question, or listeners, like, what does that line mean now? When last we met, what is the line? I was the master.
I was but the learner.
But the learner.
And I think I just want to think that like that is running through Darth Vader's mind. He's like, I see you're still the master and I am the learner. So it does work. It still works.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I think it's totally true, right? I mean, that's a great... We talked about the mirroring, right? I think really effectively, they intercut those flashbacks.
I think the intercutting was very effective. The CGI was less effective.
I don't even know how much they CGI'd him.
A
little bit. But
Hayden Christensen was CGI.
Yeah, but he still looked much older than he did. Like, I just recently saw another picture of him in that era, and he is, like, much...
No, well, because he's like a teen.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's literally 20 years younger.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
The Obi-Wan looks fine because I think like at that point he was his height, everything in shape was the same. It doesn't work as well when you go back to a teen look.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. The difference between being 15 and 35 is a lot harder than the difference between being, you know, 25 and 45. So,
exactly.
Which is, you know, that's on humanity, Kat. That's not on George Lucas.
It's fine.
Fine. I enjoyed their... I mean, I think their fight was fun. It was there were the interesting parallels and metaphors in it, both in terms of the parallels from this fight to the fight they will have in A New Hope. I thought there were also, like, there was an intentional kind of parallel to the Reva fight, where, Anakin loses his lightsaber, and then when Anakin is fighting Reva as Darth Vader, he doesn't even bother with a lightsaber. And, you know, I thought the choreography of it was fun and worked for me. And their dialogue was interesting. I mean, it was all about, you know, aggression and what weapons you need. But it seems like, you know, Obi-Wan wins because he wins the tactical battle in this episode.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. He is smart enough to know exactly what all of Anakin's flaws are, and that he is still, in some way, the person that he knew and trained, right? Like, that's what it comes down to, is he realizes, essentially, you know, he is still going to be reckless. He's still going to be aggressive and assertive. And I can use that to my advantage.
Yes. Yeah. If the Empire played this safe, they're doomed. But he knows that he can trick them, basically, right?
Yeah.
I did the thing I think that didn't super work for me this episode. I think this might be my kind of main quibble, was kind of the amount of back and forth in this kind of castle siege where, you know, he gets to go and talk to Reva and it's taking them a long time to get in. And then she decides like, well, I'm just going to use my lightsaber and cut this open. And now it's open.
I was wondering, why didn't you start with that?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there it's, you know, I was waiting for there to be a line of like, well, it's, you know, magic shielded. And so we can't, you know, and then he's like, well, I'm going to go surrender. And they have the thing where it's like, we open the door like a little bit and like throw Obi-Wan through. And then he gets locked up. And then he gets away from his captors, presumably because Reva arranges for it.
Yes.
But there was kind of, there was a lot of movement.
The blocking sort of in this episode is a little clumsy because they have a lot of stuff they need to get done. Mm-hmm. And they, I've definitely run into this problem sometimes where you're writing something and you're like, these people need to go here. Oh, no, they need to go here. Oh, but they need to go back there. And it's like, oh, there's a better way to do this, but I kind of just don't have the time or energy to like refactor all of this.
I distinctly were getting a lot of pieces of paper out and trying to draw out one of your books and like, how does this, how do you get from point A to point B with like, how do you make doors work? I think was the issue. Doors in this outer space.
In space, yeah. There's always, there's always challenges, and sometimes you don't end up with the most elegant solution, and sometimes and, life is messy.
And you know, I mean, maybe it's one of those, if you're if you're pulled into it, you don't care. It and I'm not saying like this is the thing I saw. It just felt a little clunky. You know, I like that Obi-Wan and Reva have that first conversation like through a door. I thought that was kind of neat.
That was great.
But yeah, I guess it I mean, it was hard because this was their episode where they needed to have like a lot of back and forths. In real time and in flashback and so on. But also the kind of the premise of the episode is like, but they're separated by a wall.
Yeah, I mean,
Between the door was great. And it was, again, I love the fact that they're having these very quiet personal conversations in how do you have that in a large group and make it feel intimate and personal. And the same thing, we see that later in the episode too, when he's on his knees and she's interrogating him. They have very quiet conversations back and forth. I also didn't really enjoyed how they did that. The idea that you could have that even when you're surrounded by the enemy.
Yeah, I love that bit where he's like, I'm going to bring Vader here for you, right? Like, that's a great bit of Obi-Wan-ing right there. I really I thought that was great, and the way that sort of lowered, and you also have all those troopers, and like the troopers are like, this is way above my pay grade, I'm not here to listen to a conversation. I do rather those people did not know I existed. Because that's bad news, man. And some of the some of the plotting is a little clunky in the, again, sort of the blocking like physicality aspects of it, where it's like, well, we're locking you in the space, and it's like, aha, well then we'll lock ourselves in the space. And it's like, okay.
But also, and you know, also, we're, guess what? We're going to leave via the big door, which no one cared about.
Why did nobody cover that
one? Why didn't you park one TIE fighter up there? You know, and I mean, I guess part of it is like, well, instead of commanding from his Star Destroyer, the whole thing is Darth Vader gets tricked into coming down to the surface. And so that's, you know, that was the trick that Obi-Wan played.
He's a little too hands-on.
The
problem.
Well, he's angry. I thought the choice that he used Reva was kind of interesting, because, you know, I feel like there's another version of a Jedi who would have wanted to like save her, right? That does not seem to be it. That was, doesn't even really feel like that was considered and rejected so much as like, I got other things going on right now.
There's a little bit of like leverage there, right? It's like one of those cases where you're like, okay, I can see this person has so much energy devoted into this idea that I can't, stopping that and reversing it is hard, but redirecting it is easy.
I agree, though. I suppose, like, considering the hate that she has for him, I think the only way he could get her to work with him is for Obi-Wan, is for Obi-Wan to give Reva what she wants, which is a chance to Darth Vader. And with sort of the time they had. But I will say, the jumping to the actual lightsaber fight between Darth Vader and Reva is, I think we talked about this in the episode, the one, I forget, when been the third episode? Second or third? It must be the second episode where they end up on the planet. Which planet, you ask? The one that ends up with Darth Vader walking down the street and just killing people indiscriminately.
That's three.
That's three. Okay, right.
That's three, yeah.
And I think we had this whole conversation about, and seeing that lightsaber fight of, okay, how, we had the conversation of like, how threatening is Darth Vader? How good is he as a lightsaber? We know there's a lot of fear of him, and I think seeing that fight with Reva and seeing him relying on the Force to have that fight, and he just came across as just like a cat playing with their dinner, and just like a mouse, and just
unstoppable force.
It was incredible. Just like the footwork was excellent, and just like how how it made it seem that he was never in any real danger whatsoever.
Yeah. Also, a style of a Star Wars lightsaber fight we'd never seen before, which is, I don't know, pretty cool to be to see a very different style of combat happening, a different... I don't know if it counts as a duel, if it's too one-sided, but...
Two things
you know.
I loved. One about that fight in particular, not only is he sort of toying with her, but for the first time, it really gives us a better idea. A lot of people... I think there's like that tendency of like, oh, there's only two Sith, but there are all these other, you know, Dark Jedi and Inquisitors running around. And it's like very clearly shows the relative skill levels here of, okay, you might be just good enough to use a lightsaber and throw people around here and there, but you were barely, like, not
you
only
no
were you not
the Force.
Trained and you weren't trained by a Sith, but you are also... we're only gonna let you get so good.
Yes.
Yeah. Like if you get too good, you're gonna get on our watch list, and that's not a good idea because you know things weren't gonna end well for you. So I love that actually showed off a disparity there of like the people who are trained, and they make a point of her. We still don't entirely know Reva's story in terms of how she goes from that scared Padawan who was playing dead to becoming an Inquisitor, which I think is also an interesting question. I don't know if they'll go into it or not, but it's kind of like an interesting, like, so at some point you decided, I can see why you decided that was the right way to go, but how did you end up there? But the other thing I wanted to mention, which I really liked and noted during the flashback lightsaber duel, is there are actually a bunch of echoes in that duel to Vader's fighting style in the original trilogy. Specifically, I think there's a there's some scenes where Anakin is hammering away with one arm at Obi-Wan that is very reminiscent of his fight with Luke in Return of the Jedi. Like almost some shots that are very, very close.
That's
so like
that's
I liked
cool.
a lot of those little signature things because he's so brutal, right? He's just standing there slamming Obi-Wan. Exactly. He's all power, no finesse. And I thought that was a great sort of through line for Anakin to the point of the original trilogy where he is still even now he's even more hulking and monstrous because of the suit, but he is he's a brute force kind of fighter.
My headcanon is that if you're an actual trained force user, you shield yourself in some way so you can't just be shoved around,
right?
So
I like that,
you know, the so the Inquisitors who have force powers but pretty rudimentary force powers basically, and they're it's like you only train them in the offensive force powers, right? You don't bother
like,
training them how to defend themselves against you.
They're
so
your
they
minor
no,
leaders. You call them up to every once in a while,
or it's like it's in the light of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, right? So like the Inquisitors are really, to your point, Dan, are like really threatening when no one else has force powers, but when they're with the real Sith. I think that's a really interesting point.
Like,
also, we've realized in this episode that three people get gut wounds from lightsabers and all live. Reva, the Grand Inquisitor, and then Reva again. So I'm maybe just it cauterizes it. It's unclear, but
not very precise.
The lightsaber doesn't seem quite as deadly as it did before.
I'm no space doctor, but probably in the Star Wars universe, most of your intestines are just there for show. I don't know.
I had a lot of action figures. None of them had intestines.
When you're drinking blue milk, you don't. You know,
three people die live through gut wounds, and yet Padme dies of what exactly again?
Sadness.
Malpractice.
I am curious about the maternal morality,
that one
mortality
droid
rate.
Had, malpractice and was like, did not want to admit it. Nothing I can do.
Speaking of droids, his name is.
The loader
droid.
I was so upset.
Wielding a gun. I feel like, you know, not a lot of droids, not a lot of battle droids after the Clone Wars in Star Wars. That guy, pretty effective and a sad way to go for a robot that had, what, maybe a line of dialogue?
None. But, he doesn't speak at all.
Did he not even have like a robot line?
They even say that he doesn't speak. That's one thing when Leia speaks to him. Like, I really would look forward to the Tala loader series.
No,
I think that'd be delightful.
He seemed like a golden retriever of robots.
He was lovely. I'm so sad that he died.
That death scene did remind me a lot of the K2SO death scene from Rogue One.
They have a
too.
Similar kind of physique, right? Yeah. They're a little top heavy, big eyes.
I enjoyed that scene a lot. It was very, and he like shields her and everything. Like, I thought that was great.
I also thought Lola with the tiny restraining bolt on her, which I imagine comes in the same box that they keep the child-sized handcuffs in. These are our things for taking out our most adorable of captives. But restraining bolts, those are problems. So
apparently they do a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they restrain you, they turn you evil, they make you remote controllable.
Give you red eyes, so everyone else knows you're evil.
I was a little not impressed with the return of the Grand Inquisitor. I don't know if we'll see him do more in the final episode. It mainly felt like, I'm not dead, for continuity with deep purposes. And I was like, whatever.
I did like the idea that Reva's whole plan was kind of pointless because Vader had basically seen it all. Because again,
you can't
pull one over on a guy who can sense all your feelings. If every time you hang out with somebody who's like, wow, this person really hates me, like so much that they're gonna try to kill me.
Yes.
Like, it's pretty hard to like keep that one under wraps.
And I mean, I guess ultimately, what is your plan again? Your plan is you want to kill Darth Vader, and your plan is get promoted to the top. It seems like there's a lot of competition, and your coworkers do not like you and possibly want to kill you in order to keep that from happening. To get, like, 5 minutes alone with him? Is that the end game?
Stab him with a light dipper. I feel like we could learn not
more. But
why, like,
could, why did you have to get promoted to do that? Yeah, I mean...
I feel like you could have, like, been trust. Like, I would like to be... No. I feel like you could have been like, I want to be Darth Vader's personal chef. Like, you have, like... There could have been so many better ways to kill him.
I don't think he eats a lot through the helmet, so...
Well, there's a straw.
There's not a moment where, like, he's like, oh, I was preparing pufferfish, and I didn't take out the poisonous organ, and Darth Vader's like, oh, no!
No, no, I'm like, you become one of his doctors, and like there are so many other ways that my goal is to stab you.
That's a whole nother limited series here on Disney Plus, is the people who try to kill Darth Vader from all these different like
professions. Dan, you get the mixture wrong on that back to tank, and it's you're gonna hear about
that's
it.
Exactly. I mean, it's
yeah, we accidentally got the chlorine ratio wrong on the back to tank, and now he's
sometimes
like,
when all you have is a lightsaber, everything looks like a problem you can solve with a lightsaber.
I'm willing to say she's a Padawan and she's blinded by hate, so you know, so yeah, that was the
didn't
path
think
for
of
her.
Her
but I feel like
I
this...
just you know also is like you took your first your first moment with him since being Grand Inquisitor, and also you know it's I mean it was like, you probably should have stabbed him while he was doing all that stuff with the ship.
Oh, yeah, you missed your shot there. You were way too slow there.
But well, I mean, she hesitated, right? I'm willing to believe that it was like, she was basically not ready for it.
And also, like, let's also be clear here, and we think about other people trying to assassination attempts. I think about, like, the CIA trying to bring down
Castro
and, like, all their failures that are just sort of
laughable.
Do you
think Darth Vader has
a lot
of duplicates wandering around?
Yes.
A lot of body doubles.
He
a lot
probably
of guys,
does.
A lot of just, right? lot of just stormtroopers who have to like. It's my week in the suit this week. This is.
Oh man, you got Vader duty. Oh, that's so good.
Oh, that suit hasn't been cleaned in years.
Oh my god, they hate that so much.
Yeah. I enjoyed the the pulling the ship out of the air was cool to see.
That was very cool.
I was thinking there's a scene like that in one of the video games where you're Vader's apprentice, and I think you pull a Star Destroyer out of the sky.
Yes.
And and out of orbit, and I was like, that's very cool. Why don't they do that all the time? And you know, I'm willing to believe it's very taxing.
They did it also happened in Rise of Skywalker. Rey pulls the ship down and then thinks she killed Chewie.
Yes,
that whole bit.
But there's
transport.
And just like that ship, there's a second ship.
Yes,
well, that was great.
Always have.
That's why I think it does make sense that it's so taxing, because otherwise you'd be like, oh, I'll just take down the ship too. It's like, oh, another ship. Damn.
Yeah,
the old 1-2. Yeah, I love all the graphics on him taking on the ship and then ripping the ship apart.
That was
a really, again, terrifying, great scene. I enjoyed that quite a bit. I mean, you know, it's always the trouble with something that's as nebulous as the Force.
Yes.
What can you do? What can't you do? What are the limits? What are people's relative powers? These are the kinds of things that nerds love to argue about, but honestly don't really interest me that much.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the less you explain it, the better. Wow, what if there was some biological component to it that we could measure, Dan?
No.
Cats? No?
No. This is where I Brandon Sanderson, one of my favorite authors, like has a whole, who writes a lot of very extensive magic systems. His, like, I think its final rule is like, at the end of the day, if it's cool, I'm going to do what's cool. Right. And I feel like that applies to the Force too, of just if it's clever use, like, let's definitely do it. It's just good storytelling,
and it's fun to watch. I mean there's a scene too, a similar scene in Rebels with Vader and like a well, they drop like an ad on him at one point. And like the first scene, like Kanan and Ezra are facing off against him, and they drop like an ad on him, and they're like, oh man, did we just kill a Sith Lord? And then he just like levitates it up, and they're like, oh no, we are screwed. Menace. That's what's so fun about it is like, it is terrifying to watch this unstoppable force, like that last scene in Rogue One in the hallway where he's just coming and like killing everybody, and you're like, oh, this is bad news. Like, we don't like this.
Bad news bears.
All right, so we got one episode left to go.
Yeah. What are they going to do?
Well, we know they're going to have
Leia
has to get home.
Here's my prediction. 10 minutes in, Reva kills Luke Skywalker. 40 minutes of Obi-Wan searching Tatooine for an appropriately sized Jawa to put in Luke's clothing so that the movies can continue.
What if there were...
To be fair, what if she just stabs him in the gut?
Yeah.
But he's fine.
Yeah,
he's fine.
You know.
What if there were triplets?
Oh, I like this thought. Interesting.
I think they should have spread them out further. So,
We're going to put two on this planet and one way over there.
Yeah. So I agree. Leia has to go back to Bail Organa. I think Bail Organa is going to meet the rebellion. I think Bail's going to meet Roken.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. And he's going to be like, boy, I got some funding for you.
Yeah. Can I join your mailing list?
Yeah. What do you think of the name Fulcrum?
They're going to drop that and be like, oh, wow, Bail Organa on our side. This could really be the fulcrum that tips the balance.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Boy, don't write that. Please don't.
No.
I'm a writer and I'm telling you not to write that. And then I don't know. I think, and this is actually, I think your point, Kat, we talked about this a little bit as we were watching it, was it's the point where Reva's going to realize that Obi-Wan didn't run away for no reason, that he had something that he was protecting and something that he was doing.
Mm.
And I think it's the possibility of her ending up somehow sacrificing herself to protect the kids and keep Vader away from them, right? Because that's got to happen.
I could see that. Because I think we talked about this in the member only one about the Great Clone Wars episode, where Darth Maul's dying words are essentially like, promise me he's the chosen one, right? That all this is worth it if it means that Vader is failed.
Plus, specifically in the case of Reva, the fact that he is protecting children is going to be a big thing, right?
I think you're right. You're absolutely right there.
Yeah, so I think that's how we're going to play out there.
Just kind of connecting the dots, it seems like Darth Vader can't end up on Tatooine, right? That would be real bad.
No, because it's
there's no way to come back from
wait
that.
Wait a second, I recognize this
no,
voice.
No, I agree.
So
I
something's got to kind of... Something has to put Darth Vader back on the shelf, and it's probably something more exciting than the Emperor sends him an email and is like, you have not been putting in the right hours recently. What is this Jabim? That's not what I assigned you to do. So something bigger is going to kind of have to take him off the scent or send him off on something.
Or he's going to come to the conclusion that he thinks Obi-Wan is dead, right? He's got to do a fake out, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, they're currently on a cruiser without a hyperdrive being chased down. This is actually, I'm expecting almost like a Deus Ex Machina from Bail Organa, because Bail Organa says he's about to go to Tatooine. Actually, Bail Organa is supposed to go to Tatooine. Reva's going to go to Tatooine. I don't know.
Reva kills Bail Organa.
His place.
Reva is not doing any favors for the Empire in any form, because they think she's dead.
Should finish that off.
Yeah, they really, you don't, just like one more lightsaber,
head.
I don't know.
Just go for the head.
Yeah. Just give it the old Jango Fett.
I think the more interesting showdown here is, here's my guess. I think we established the Kenobi gets away from Vader in the first 10-15 minutes of the episode.
Mm-hmm. So do they, have they had their last?
I don't think they're running into each other again.
That seems fair.
Yeah, I think we have to cut, unless it's like a 2-hour episode, I think that has to be the last interaction. And it's good. Like I said, I think you could easily go from that scene into the next time they see each other is on the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
And that works nicely.
Yep, and I agree with you that the only way to get him to stop looking is to probably convince him that Obi-Wan is dead.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happens. Maybe it's a thing where like the ship looks like it blows up when it jumps into hyperspace, or they fake it or something like that. But it's gotta convince. There's no other reason for him to stop looking.
Does Kumail Nanjiani still have his lightsaber?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, but he has to have the lightsaber again later. I'm just wondering if that character, I mean, that character seems like they're set up to do, and they came back in this episode and didn't do anything because they're going to make, they're going to make a noble sacrifice, right?
Possibly. That's possible. Or he's going to, like, fake the body or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, trust the Carnotaurus to figure out how to get
Kenobi.
Out.
I just had my teeth match so that they match your dental records. Just a little thing I do with friends.
I'm a fan. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I do think toothy smile.
I knew we mentioned him briefly, but I do want to say Kumail Nanjiani. Again, I really enjoy him in this role.
He brings some much-needed humor. I liked him in this episode more than the first one. I think the first one lacked a little bit of subtlety I was looking for.
This one felt a lot more natural. And again, that moment where he says, like, I can do good business here, and walks off and, like, sort of, like, a little cocky, pulls his shoulder back. And I was like, that's great acting.
Yeah. No, I liked him more in this one.
Also, did anybody freeze frame and identify all the lightsabers they have?
No.
Oh, my God. I'm sure someone else did online.
Someone did.
Yeah.
Are you looking it up, dear?
Maybe, because I'm curious.
It was a lot of lightsabers.
So I think there's something still coming in that regard. And then I think the final showdown is probably Obi-Wan thinks, so great, I've returned Leia to Bail Organa, and I can go back to Tatooine where it's safe and there's nobody who wants to kill me.
He goes into his cave and he's like, oh, Jawa stealing all my stuff again. But then it's Reva or something. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. But I think Dan is right. I think the, especially since the connection back with the children and protecting the child, I think that will definitely be whether or not Reva changes or Reva kills or interesting. I don't know. I don't know where this is going to end up. And again, I see either Obi-Wan saying this is my goal now and sends off Bail Organa to the rebellion, or we'll get another thing of like Obi-Wan Kenobi will return in season two or book of Obi-Wan.
The last scene is him going back to his job and quitting, just very like, and like everybody's like applauding, and he's like, you know what? I don't need this job anymore. You can shove it.
Did what accent does Obi-Wan have in that scene?
I don't know.
I'm meatpacking here.
I don't know. Dan has that voice and the Benoit Blanc voice. I think those are your two voices.
Okay. Those are my only two?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Also, I guess your normal voice when you remember to do that one. But yes. Yeah. Anyway, anything else we need to cover with regard to Obi-Wan Part V?
I had another little thing that I did enjoy, which is Roken uses a bowcaster.
Oh, yes, right. With a green bolts.
And I just enjoyed him, like, because we see Han use it briefly in Force Awakens, and he's like, wow, this thing is great. And I just enjoyed that scene of like, yeah, why don't more people use it? Oh, yeah, it's because it's gigantic.
Yeah. doesn't collapse down.
Yeah, it's not exactly. Yep. That was the only
ergonomically
thing.
It's probably designed for somebody with very long arms, you know.
Yeah, also true. There are some other callback shots. The scene on the bridge of the Star Destroyer.
Yep.
Feels very Empire. We have the all the stuff carved into the wall about the path. Mm-hmm.
That was nice.
Which I think are references, according to some sites, references to other characters who are from the Legends canon, none of whom I even recognize. So I'm going to bother with that. Yeah. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
There's some Trandoshans in the background.
I saw that. Trandoshans who were not jerks, I guess.
No.
Trandoshans who are not bounty hunters, part of organized crime, or Wookiee killers. Or at least we didn't see them kill a Wookiee. They just Trandoshans, just refugees. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I don't say overall, I really enjoyed this episode. I think.
Yeah.
If we were to the last episode being a little, a heist, it's fine, sure, it's sort of, it didn't seem to really build on the characters, but this was great. This was, I think,
yes,
we had a character,
we got the
depth,
the emotional payoffs we had been waiting for, I think.
I agree. So, and it was also just like fun, energetic, good pacing. Yeah, sure, some of the blocking was a little off, but overall I enjoyed it. And I think one of the weaknesses of the series have been the fights, and I think this one actually did the fights quite well this time around. We didn't overspend too much time on them. But yeah, those are my two thoughts.
Yeah. All right. Well, We will be back. Of course, we do have a letter. We should
talk
about
it
really quick.
We have an email.
Yeah, we have an email. So let's read this. This is from listener David. Writes,
listener David.
Hi, listener David.
Writes, dear Dan, Kat, and Tony, I've been driven by your previous listener contributions to write in. I thought he was going to say driven to madness, but sure.
Yeah.
These concerns about whether the Obi-Wan series breaks canon are all from a particular point of view.
Mm.
The wrong one. Oh, well played, David. The obvious solution to canon inconsistencies is to just remake the original trilogy, starting with A New Hope. This way we can excise things like R2-D2's memory, Vader not recognizing the protocol droid he built as a kid, Obi-Wan's faulty recollections, Han's force denial, and the kiss. My question is, when the inevitable remake happens, who should be cast in the available roles, or should it just be done with CGI? Secondary questions, what other inconsistencies can be smoothed out in a remake? Thanks, as always, for your insightful and entertaining podcast. Please don't take the above as anything other than tongue-in-cheek. May the force be with you always. Listener David from Dublin.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I'm just going to say I appreciate everything listener David has to share with us. He seems like a lovely chap with a good head on his shoulders. So, listener David, I hope I'm right.
I don't know that I have anybody that I would cast in a Star Wars remake. I do think it's inevitable that at some point they will remake it, probably in our lifetimes. But they have gotten so big into the whole, like, we don't want to recast people. We want to use the CGI to, like... And in some places, I think, as we discussed in a previous episode, I think the what they have done with Vader is excellent.
Yes.
Because and it's easy because you don't see his face.
Yeah, Vader is fine. Vader can always be
and the voice
James Earl Jones. We talked about this.
Yeah, I think, again, it's I don't even think about it now, right? Like, it doesn't take me out of the story at all because I'm like, oh, it's just Darth Vader. But it's... And playing himself. I think, you know, it's definitely trickier when you're dealing... They've gotten much better at, like, substituting sort of CGI actors, but I don't know, an entire movie where it's like a CGI double?
I don't think we want that.
Well, here's my question. What if it's animation? What if it's not CGI, but animation?
I'd be okay with that, but I just don't think they're going to do it either. And then you need to get... I don't know, do you, I guess do you use the same voice thing, or do you get people who sound like them?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think, unfortunately, David, I think you offer a very valid question that my brain just completely rejects, because the inconsistencies in the movies don't bother me, I think, nearly as much as they bother many, many other people. And there's the fact that they've already been remaking the movies a million different ways with George Lucas's various adjustments. Mm. And to me, there's the ludicrous things of what he doesn't bother changing.
Yeah, I thought that
the things he does change are so weird.
I thought that was...
And random, but he doesn't change the
things.
Yeah, the very specifically the special editions. What gets changed and what gets added, and then what gets left alone?
Yeah, it's like really important to shape. Yes, completely agree.
Yeah.
I think it's also an interesting question of why would they be remade and when they would be remade. Mm-hmm. So I think about it, I've got sort of two overarching theories here. One is I can envision. Well, I still think the original series is going to be remade in our lifetimes. And I could see that happening with, okay, and it's basically, I call it like the Spider-Man principle, right? You make the series, it does okay, and when it starts to fade after a while, you need to reboot the series, so you remake the main storyline.
Arguably, they did that with the sequel trilogy.
Yeah, that's true, but that's the same characters, right? And with Batman 2, right? How many times have they done the Batman origin story? And maybe in 20 years, like, Star Wars is not going to... There is no way Disney can keep turning out high-quality Star Wars shows that still attract this audience and this money for, like, say, the next 15-20 years.
You're saying, Kat, that it has to fail first.
It has to fail. Something has to go horribly wrong, and they put Star Wars on the shelf, and then some enterprising producer or director's like, you know what we should do? We should remake the original series. And that's when... But then the question is, like, what's going on in that decade, right? So, like, if the early 2000s was all about the gritty reboots, and the 90s is all about, like, the horrible high school rom-coms, and the 80s is all the slaps. Like, the question is, what's going on? There's always, I feel like, a genre that catches the population's interest the most time. So I have been arguing for the gritty reboot of Star Wars, though I don't want to watch that. So I think that's what would drive it.
In 2075, where it's just like, everything's clowns now.
Yeah. Finally.
We're really now into musical theater. Musical theater is really popular again, right?
Finally.
So we're gonna do Star Wars the musical.
Oh, man.
Finally.
Yeah. Spielberg's, it's like Spielberg's West Side Story remake, essentially.
Haven't seen it, but I heard that was actually pretty good.
Yeah, but again, it's like a movie that was remade and was like, it was a great movie, and we just remade another good movie.
Yeah. Yep. Also, why is Disney doing all the live-action versions of the original animated movies?
Well, that's why I think, what if you go backward? What if you do an animated version of Star Wars?
Live action with all the...
Oh, man, I pictured it,
well,
though.
Well, because it's like, it's basically like, how do we just extract more money without having any creativity? Not that it doesn't take them work to do live action things, but with, you know, with minimal creativity.
Isn't that essentially, though, the Lego series they're running? I feel like in many ways the Lego series is just like retelling the stories, but with Legos.
But the Lego series are
funny.
Humorous.
They're cute.
Yes, they're funny.
Different genre, but it's essentially largely the same character storytelling.
I think that there's a good chance stuff gets remade, but part of me also thinks like you can just keep spinning and keep trying other stuff until you find something that kind of works. And part of me wonders if that's like, you know, the MCU, for example, by comparison, has been loath to redo anything that they've done before, but they keep sort of building on what they've done before and spinning off new characters.
But it's a house of cards. Someday it has to go tumbling down.
Exactly. I mean, everything does eventually, right? I think eventually you're more worried that there's a backlash against all this stuff, which I think there already is, but it makes too much money for that backlash to really have the effect.
Unless it becomes James Bond. Like, James Bond has lasted for what, 50, 60, 70 years? Yeah. Doctor Who, true.
60 years, yeah.
Yeah, so this one is like, if they remake it, all I'm going to ask is, I really don't like the use, I've talked about before, I really don't like the use of animated actors. I think it is, I understand sometimes when we make characters look younger, so like Samuel Jackson in Captain Marvel, it's like, okay, I get it. But just wholesale replace character, it feels like I've mentioned this before, my frustration is it doesn't give new actors the opportunity to interpret the roles and bring their own creativity to it, and I think we, the viewers, are robbed of something when they do that.
See, you're so focused on the creativity of the actors, Kat. What about the creativity of Disney's legal team, who has determined that several people's souls are now in the public domain, and so they will be the actors in all of their lifeless puppets that look like people who died 100
the
years
point
ago
about
will dance across the stage for us. Dan, just talk over me. Let me continue.
I was going to say, to the counterpoint of like the people who think recasting is bad, like, I give you Donald Glover as Lando, which is just a truly inspired performance.
It's
fun. And it's great.
It's
like, it's
energetic.
You need to open yourself up to the possibility that some people, no matter what you do, are not going to like it. So you
nerds
just got to.
Nerds love everything.
You just got to be like, you know what? It's fine. Like,
it's
I think
fine.
This is the bad lesson they took from Solo.
Yes.
Underperforming against their expectations was, what must have been done wrong was that we recast those characters and nobody liked that. It's like, no
that was not the takeaway.
Love that movie. I think that movie is very good. I enjoy it quite a bit. It's not without its flaws, but it, like, I still enjoy it, and I think you can't point to something that simple and say that was the problem with it. But,
I mean, Dan, that's a very good cover-up for, the problem was that we recast people and not that we fired a director halfway through the movie. Why did we do that?
Yeah.
Why didn't start over? Why?
Yeah, so you know, there's a lot of...
Yeah. Yeah,
I hope they take away from that you know, there's still a lot of great opportunity there to recast roles or just create new stories. Honestly,
new
stories.
It's a different fictional world, but every week I'm watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which features a bunch of people playing famous characters that originated in the 60s, and it's a delight.
It's awesome.
It can work.
And let's point out, not the first time several of those characters have been played by other people.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Every time someone new plays Spock, it just makes it a little bit easier. You know, Leonard Nimoy is great, but he's unavailable.
Right, this would be more like a character. Like, you step into a role that this is my interpretation of Hamlet. This is my interpretation of Cordelia.
If you didn't see the original Hamlet, Kat, it's just not the same.
We're just bringing
name
that
your top
actor.
Five Hamlets.
Yeah, we're bringing that actor back from the 1600s constantly.
I think it'd be kind of, I mean, I'm not, again, be very clear. I genuinely, I do not ever want to see another Spider-Man movie about retelling the story of Spider-Man. Like, I'd be very happy if I never seen an origin story of Spider-Man in my life.
I mean, what if you say that, and we don't know what the plot of the next Into the Spider-Verse movie
is. That's true. I thought that, and then I saw
there are more Spider-Men in that you don't know their stories of yet.
And I said that, and then I
you don't
want to
see another
Tom Holland origin story.
Yes. You don't want to see another Peter Parker, right?
It's the same story again and again.
Yes.
Right. But this is where, Dan was showing me the first email from listener David. I was thinking back, okay, I've thought about the original series, but what about the first three and the last three? And I think the one thing that I came to the conclusion on is it'd be interesting to remake those, because I think the first three, it's a great story. It's a really good story. It's just poorly told. But I think the last three movies are very well made or very well told, but it's a horrible story.
Yeah.
And I kind of, it'd be interesting to see someone else try to take those on, especially the first three. Because I think there's, I mean, this is the Clone Wars show. Like, there's a really great story there. Like, maybe someone could figure out how Padme dies, and it's not
To Tony's point from a minute ago, it was funny how much time George Lucas spent perfecting, quote unquote, that original trilogy.
And when he gotta put those prequels, rocks in front of R2-D2, Dan, really.
The prequels, he was just was like, got it the first time, nailed it.
Yep, nailed it.
but to its credit, it is a great story.
Yeah,
it's a really great story.
Terribly executed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and you know, I wonder.
Get a chance.
Well, and I mean, I don't know if before anyone gets a legitimate chance to do it, is that I'm sure a bunch of people are going to do versions of those movies with the serial numbers filed off as like film school projects, and maybe some of them will circulate, and that will be amazing.
Definitely already exists.
Yeah.
It's like the Phantom.
Well,
Habits.
Listener David, you sure gave us a lot to chew on
there. That was a good one. Thank you.
Well, if you'd like us to chew on your letter, which we can do.
But that's your iPad.
You got one more chance, because there's one more episode of Obi-Wan coming next week. You can send your emails to acp@theincompo.com or tweet at us at @ACP_cast on Twitter. And we will have to see where we go from here. I believe Andor is the next Star Wars series. It's in August, so we'll see what's up with that.
And when does Bad Batch come back online?
Fall.
Okay.
And then there was also the Tales of the Jedi anthology, and I thought there was something else coming.
Before we talk Andor, we should rewatch Rogue One. Rogue One. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. We'll do a little. Maybe do a little recap. All right. Well, that's all we got time for this week. I would, of course, like to thank my co-host, as always, Tony Sindelar. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Kat Benish, always a pleasure.
It's been fun.
And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next week. But until then, may the Force be with you.